Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with...
Shoshana Keats-Jaskel.
We have another This Happened that's going to take over our whole show. Many of you know that there is a long-beloved children's book author in the Jewish world named Rabbi Chaim Walder, or Walder in Hebrew, and his books were in Hebrew and in English, and they began, most ironically and disturbingly, with a book entitled Kids Speak. I don't know if that's really the first one, but it was certainly one of the most prominent. I actually personally am unfamiliar with these books. We did not ever really have them in my house. They're not of the books that I saw shared around that much, but they are bestsellers, and they have populated Jewish bookshelves of homes with children for many, many, many years. Shoshana, do you have them in your house?
Right, so I was just going to say, it's actually ironic, I guess is a better word. There's really no Israeli kids who haven't seen them, at least in school. They have to come across them, meaning there's over 50 books. They're really, really popular. They're made for kids to read, and they're, you know, from the mouths of kids, meaning each child gets to tell their story. And we had at least one book in the house, and I do remember my husband going over it with one of my daughters, and it was like some, like literally the story was this kid got his hand stuck in a meat grinder and mangled. And my husband,
my goodness.
Yeah, I know, my husband's like, what the heck is this? Get this out of here. So like he was like forgetting anything else. He was just like, this is awful. What is this? And my kids were like, oh, a lot of them were like kind of really like terrifying stories. So
we have one on loan, I think. Meaning I know that we borrowed a book from a friend and I have no idea what it is and I can't even find it. But this is already going back a few years. We better give it back or find out if she wants us to burn it.
Yes.
Why would she want us to burn it?
Coming up.
Why would she want us to burn it? Let's not lose the main story here. The main story here is, of course, that this man, the author of these books, who is ostensibly, although I understand not licensed, also a child psychotherapist, has now been allegedly, I don't know, he's accused. He's certainly been accused of molestation, of rape, of...
Well, he's been accused for a long time, but recently Haaretz came out with a spread. That's really what finally brought this out to the light, just like, by the way, Meshi Zahav. Haaretz came out with accusations that were investigated. They've been, unfortunately, and this is part of the thing we're going to talk about, there have been whispers for a long time.
I didn't know about the whispers because, again, I don't even know about the books, right? Meaning I wouldn't have known necessarily, nobody really necessarily knew about the whispers anyway, or the people who did know about them were fewer and further between as compared to the people who were purveyors, you know, readers and, owners of the books. And the tricky part here is, I mean, listen, anytime anybody is accused of rape and molestation of children, we are in a bad situation. But this goes farther than that in a certain kind of, I don't know, disturbing way, right? Because he was an author of books that influenced children, maybe not in your house, Shoshana, and not in my house, but in many, many, many homes of people that we know and love. So now the question is, how do you tell your children who have been reading these books as quote-unquote good literature, right? Meaning something that's worthwhile they're reading, and to say, you know, there are people who do bad things to children. And one friend I have was horrified to have to introduce this concept to her young children as not just that this guy was a bad guy, but that there are such people at all. That's the age that her children are at. And because she needed to explain to them why these books could no longer be part of their influence in the home. At the very least, in the meantime, while allegations are investigated, and some people are, as I say, burning his books already based on the allegations, where there's smoke, there's fire, it's too much. And some people are waiting to see whether he can clear his name. The number of people who have come forward in the accusations suggests that there is some fire.
There will be no clearing of his name. No, listen, it's unfortunately very similar to Meshi Zahav in the sense that the people in the know in the Haredi community have known for a long time. I'm familiar with and I am friendly with Haredi activists. And each time this comes out in the Haredi community, they're like, yeah, we knew it. There have been whispers, more than whispers. Like when Meshi Zahav came out a number of months ago, the Haredi world within that world was not shocked. They knew. And
but
I think
you
your
who,
question-
I'll tell you who was shocked, even within the Haredi world. The Haredi rabbis who are recommending this man as a therapist to children based on his good name from those books. Meaning, I'm sure there were some people who had their suspicions and they did not recommend him as a therapist. But there are other people who literally, and unbeknownst to them, and now they are, you know, really regretting themselves, recommended this man and put the kids in risk.
When we say the Haredi world, there's not one Haredi world. I'm not saying everyone in the Haredi world. But, you know, when we talk about those people who would hear, you know, those rabbis who have such influence to the point where they would be asked these questions, or activists who speak to one another. You know, Esti Shushan of Lo Nivcharot, which is a women's political movement that basically says if we can't be elected, we won't vote for you, for Shas and for UTJ, for the two Haredi parties. So she is one activist with whom I'm quite friendly. And there's others. There's Lo Tishtok, which is We Will No Longer Be Silent, which also started as a Facebook group a number of years ago. These activists knew. They've gone to specific rabbis, but the allegations were never enough, or there weren't enough people who came forward in a way that they were able to bring it forward to the police and really do something about it. Because obviously, as we know, and we don't have to get into all of this, but in the Haredi world, when you do something like that, your normal life is over. I mean, I guess anyone's normal life is over when they bring police allegations and they have to, you know, go after someone who's harmed them and they have to prove it. I mean, it's a nightmare for any victim. And in the Haredi world, it's a bit worse just because of the way the world works around marriage and sex and life and victimhood. And so when I say the Haredi world, no one should think that I'm saying every Haredi person do. Mamash not at all. That's not what I mean.
I think what's dramatically different in this case, and I think it's part of why we're talking about this case today. First of all, we're talking about it because it's the news and because it's a huge topic for many people within the Orthodox world. And the question of what do you do as a parent and how do you teach your children is something of great interest and concern to us. Beyond that, what we have seen in the past week or two, I guess two, is that instead of what has happened in many other cases of allegations of sexual abuse or molestation or the like, very often what we see is a circling of the wagons, right? We saw this with Malka Leifer, with the Gerer Hasidim, and it included the Israeli government that included Gerer Hasidim, where they protected her for a very, 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 very long time and put other people at risk of her harm in their community while they protected her from extradition to Australia. Eventually that happened, and we've talked about that before. But in this case, rather than circle the wagons, certainly some people came forward ready with their wagons to cluster together. And some other people said, no way. And from the beginning, we'll give credit where it's due, Morty Goetz at Eichler's of Borough Park. Now, this is specific. There's several different stores in New York called Eichler's. There's one in Borough Park. He very quickly took these books off the shelves and made it public that he was doing so.
Yes.
Once he did that, and then, first of all, everybody came out of the woodwork to acclaim him.
To support Morty, yeah.
To support him for the fact that he had done this. And it wasn't necessarily clear that everybody was going to be in favor of this. And then slowly, one by one by one, other bookstores followed suit. Feldheim tabled its publication and they said, we're going to wait and see. I would say perhaps that's the most responsible response of a business while we're talking about allegations, right? There's a big difference here between a business and a family dealing with the protection of children.
Right.
Feldheim is selling books. Whether you have the books in your home and you want this man with the allegations influencing your children via his stories, which now seem a little bit more warped than I'd ever known about based on your meat grinder story, you know, is a whole different question. Rav Shmuel Eliyahu was known to come out as a strong supporter of not continuing with his books. YWN, the Yeshivish newspaper, made it very clear that when there are such allegations, we, you know, inherently stop and pause, and we know that abuse happens. The fact that this article says we know that abuse happens is already light years ahead of where I would say these same kinds of publications would have made their stance just a couple of years ago.
It's interesting, Anne, because you have people who are feeling like very much like this is a watershed moment. Like, okay, Morty Goetz has always been an activist. He's a phenomenal person. He's a fan of Chochmat Nashim. And he actually sent this to our WhatsApp group saying, this is what's happening. This is the Yeshiva World News article about it. Look at the comments and see how we're being torn down if you guys want to respond. And so, of course, our fans were like, yes, amazing, something we can do. But Morty Goetz is a phenomenal activist and he is very, very brave. And his step was absolutely like a domino effect step, certainly in America, and probably affected things here as well. But I do want to give credit to the Israeli Haredi activists who went all out and petitioned, literally petitioned and figuratively petitioned. They got a petition of over 1,500 signatures, because after these allegations came out, Valder was still in his Radio Kolchai radio program, and he was still had a column in, I think it was Yatid Ne'eman, and they said, no, this man cannot have a public platform any longer, at the very least until these things are investigated. And they did petition, and the government broadcast authority, the Rashut Hashniyah, took off Valder from Radio Kolchai, and the newspaper took off Valder's column, which is a very big deal, because you're not talking about a store in Brooklyn where, you know, Valder lives here, and he's part of the Israeli Haredi community, and he still was with children. And so taking off his newspaper article and taking off his Radio Kolchai, you know, there's two layers here, right? And there's the adults, where the whole community needs to understand this is serious and we take these things seriously. That needs to change. That has to be seen. And then there's that other question that we're here talking about, which is, what do you tell your children? And I feel like I've dodged a little bit of a bullet here, because my youngest is now 9 and I don't have his books. And yes, I've had these conversations with my kids, but I don't have to have a conversation now about a specific author who they love and who they like his books. Like, that is a whole nother level of pain and difficulty.
I know a lot of people who are going through these conversations. First, they have the question, and I think it's a question that it applies to really too many different kinds of cases. You know, the question of the artist and the art. To what extent do we hold the artist's work against the artist when the artist turns out to be some kind of lowlife or allegations of being a lowlife? And there are different answers. And I personally, I've said this before on the podcast, I think that we can take it as a case-by-case basis. What happens when we have this kind of situation? Why is this one worse, let's say, than, you know, I don't know, Harvey Weinstein and the Miramax production? And maybe it's not worse, maybe it's the same thing. But I would say that the big, big difference is that here we have an individual whose influence with children is exactly where he is messing up. Meaning the contradiction in terms that becomes so perverse that it becomes really difficult to put them together. To say, well, the books, the stories are good, so what do you care if the author is bad? I have a very, very hard time accepting that.
But that's also how he accessed children. That's how he gained trust. He spoke in the voice of a child. That's the difference. Meaning he didn't write about kids. Each section or each story was the child telling their story. And there is actually a story of a young girl who says, I had a secret. I was secret. It wasn't myself anymore. Like basically a young girl who had been molested and changed and didn't know how to speak and didn't know what to say. And eventually told her parents her story and eventually was okay because she told her story. Somebody actually posted it on Twitter to say the levels of chutzpah of this guy who's
perversion.
Doing these things.
It's not just chutzpah. It's perversion.
Perversion.
It goes
yes,
beyond
thank you.
Chutzpah.
You're right. It's not.
It's a warping of the role that he ostensibly is playing. And that's why I think that in this case, regardless of other cases, in this case, separating the artist from the art doesn't
can't be
work.
Done. No.
It doesn't work because he's warping the very message that he himself was ostensibly trying to convey. So then the question is, well, what do you do with your children who have read these books? For this, I'm going to give a shout out. I think it's an important shout out to somebody who got her act together really quickly. Yonina Rubinstein is a sexuality educator, and she immediately, she pulled a couple of all-nighters or late nights, and she put together a booklet of how to talk to your kids. She calls it When Kids Don't Speak, because his books are called Kids Speak, right? And when kids don't speak, how do you, the parent, or for that matter, the educator, right? Meaning there are different adult roles in a child's life that are important in this capacity. You know, where do you go with this? And I then got her to put it into a blog in the Times of Israel, which might be more accessible to people. But she's got it as a download for free on her website, Yonina Rubinstein, because her goal is not to make money off of this. Her goal is to prevent abuse. And the bottom line is, and we've talked with Rav Yaakov Horovitz about this, and we've talked about the book Let's Stay Safe, all of these guides, all of the recommendations begin with making sure that you are talking to your children and that you are paving the way for your children to talk to you. To say, no matter what, you can talk to me. I will believe you. You can always tell me anything, and making sure that that is clear and known. And she's got role plays in her guide, not that you should mimic or memorize what her text is, but she's giving you like a sample of how to begin conversations that are inherently difficult, that are, you know, awkward for most people. And especially if you're not already trained as a sexuality educator, you know, how are you going to open up these conversations with your kids, of kids of all ages? That, I think, is just a tremendous boon for anybody who's now stuck in this quandary.
We should get it translated into Hebrew for her.
Maybe she is. I don't know. But we should talk to her about it. Yes.
It's really important. I think there's a lot, as you're saying, Anne, there's a lot of families around the world, the Jewish world, certainly in Israel, who are reeling from this. And it's, oh, I don't know. It's so hard. It's so painful. And it's just like, you were saying before how, like, you know, parents have to talk to their kids about, you know, how a man could do this. But for me, it's actually even deeper than that. Like, how can a man do this and have gotten away with it for so long? There's a lot more implications. Like, one bad man, that's easier to talk about. But, like, a whole system that allows this to happen or doesn't believe young girls when they come forward or doesn't allow young or lets a guy unlicensed practice. I mean, there's so many levels of what the hell here that is, maybe the kids won't be asking those questions. Depends on their age. My kids are asking the questions and they're older, right? Like, my kids are just like, this guy's been a staple for years in schools. I mean, it's actually a really good question. I wonder if the schools are pulling it.
I'm sure there are schools that are pulling it.
I'm sure there are.
Right. So this is part of the issue here, right? There are people who'd never heard of Chaim Walder's name until 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever it is. And then there are other people for whom he has a tremendous influence in their lives. He's a celebrity. He's a big figure.
50 books,
but also a radio show and a newspaper column and appearances in schools and Kazette concerts, right?
A trusted
celebrity. It's a
communal
celebrity. You know, every community has their celebrities. The fact that you and I are privileged enough to have not kind of come into his circle of influence doesn't mean he didn't have a really strong, you know, tremendous circle of influence. Yeah. So that, I think, is also a very important thing to note, that this is not a fly-by-night, nobody ever heard of him kind of person. I wanted to make one more point about the what you can do. Because what if you don't have kids? Or what if your kids haven't been exposed, as our kids have not? Or your kids are older, or your kids are too young, and now you know not to bring these books into your home. I wanted to say that I was very impressed. Somebody told the story that she was in a bookstore in the past, you know, week and a half, whatever. And she happened to see that the Walder books were still on the shelves. And she went to the proprietor of the store. And she said, it's such a genteel response, right? She says, I'm sure you just didn't get around to taking them off the shelves, right? Meaning, as opposed to being pushy or obnoxious, right? And he said, oh, and he went and he took them off the shelves right away, which is also very impressive. But the idea of this, you know, see something, say something, is something that is relevant, even if these books and Walder's direct influence has not affected you, you can still do something about it if you keep your eyes open, even without the obvious, more important need of listening to children and talking to children who are in the need.
I thank you, Anne, for bringing the practical aspects to this, because we always like to leave practical aspects for people to be able to follow through. We always say that the community is the way that lasting change is going to be made. Obviously, we would encourage anyone to talk about these things and to make this conversation a little less hard and a little more normative so that we can protect our kids the best that we can, both individual and as a community.
Well, I'll take you one step further. Right? The cynical note that comes out of this is, you know, here is this guy who wrote books for children. He wasn't a Rosh Yeshiva. He wasn't a big Talmud Chacham. Or if he was, that wasn't his. If that's true, it's behind the scenes of his public persona, what people know of him. The question of whether the Haredi world, the Orthodox world altogether, would have done this same thing of canceling him, as the current language goes, right? Taking his books off the shelves, tabling the question of whether they can ever be put back on the shelves before they publish more. Families burning the books, for that matter, tossing them in the garbage, whatever. The range of response, certainly in terms of degree of upset, is real. But my question, as I say, in terms of cynicism, is how far will this go? God forbid there should ever be a next time. But in cynicism, we get to assume there will be a next time. And if that person is a Meshi Zahav, if that person is somebody who is, God forbid, again, truly respected in the more scholarly and impressive, I don't know. It's hard to say that there's other things that are more impressive than reaching the lives and minds of children, because that is such an important role. But there are roles that are, let's say, more widely respected in the Haredi world, And I wonder if they will still rally to this cause, our cause, or whether they'll say, no, no, it can't be that he did this. And I don't want to be cynical. And when I saw other people being cynical, you know, people like to come forward with all kinds of examples of the people who indeed were kind of put down and put in their place and taken off the public sphere. Mati alone comes to mind, but it took a long time and he is not really gone. And he was very, very, very well respected in his field.
It took a very long time for people to accept that Mati alone had done what he had done. I mean, there's still people that really tried to very hard not to do so. But just, you mentioned Mati alone. In the Dati Lumi world, there is something called a Forum Takana. Forum Takana is a board of rabbis and rabbaniyot and social workers and psychologists that are a body that deal with sexual abuse complaints or sexual harassment complaints for people who are over 18. Under 18, you have to go to the cops. Over 18, the person themselves can make a decision.
That. Under 18, if you know of any story of molestation, you have to go to the cops. Done.
Yes. At least in Israel, and I believe also in the United States, you must go to the police. It's not an option. So if someone under 18 would go to Forum Takana, they would say, you must go to the police. This is not where we have jurisdiction, is probably the wrong word, but this is not where we will come in. You have to go to the police. If it's someone over 18, like a Shirut Leumi girl, a young woman who is doing national service, and she is harassed at work, or at her national service volunteer job, or a student, or a woman, and her rabbi, it has to be someone, a person who has authority over her in some way, or is a communal figure in some way. And that's what they did. So Mati alone was investigated at first by this Forum Takana, and they told him he had to do certain things, which included not being near students, which included leaving his job, which included, and he just didn't listen. And so eventually they did take it to the cops. We're not talking about Mati alone right now, but the point being, there's no such thing in the Haredi world. It's more like, tell a rabbi and we'll take care of it, or don't tell anyone because you're going to ruin your shiduchim. But I think, Anne, I think we can both be cynical. Like Avital, she's a Goldschmidt, who's a journalist, and she said, testimonies against Walder were known for years and no one cried out. The same with Meshi Zahav, the same with whoever will be next. Leaders in power know, and they do nothing until they're forced by the most brutal exposure from the outside. How do we break this vicious cycle? And I think the community itself, again, I will repeat, the community itself must raise a hue and cry and say, this cannot happen in our beloved community. It is not okay. We will continue to expose. We will take this seriously, and we will believe people, at least to the extent that we look into allegations and we don't shush them or tell them they won't get a good shiduch or tell them they're going to be taken out of school. The community has to refuse to allow these things to occur when someone comes forward and says, I was hurt.
So here I'll give the less cynical approach. Right. And here I'll quote another Times of Israel blog post written by friend of Chochmat Nashim, Helen Gottstein, where she recently wrote a post about what she called it, the good news about sexual harassment allegations. And she wasn't talking about Walder at all. But the fact that people nowadays are willing to believe. Right. That doesn't mean that anybody should just come make allegations. The false allegations are a real thing as well. But the fact that there is a willingness to believe is a big change. In the
Agreed.
Ears of the listeners, in the world that receives the complaint. And now you have to investigate the complaint and handle it responsibly. But again, it's a different fight, I think, than it once was. So hopefully on that optimistic note, we'll stop here. And listen, the conversation is ongoing. And I hope that the next time we come to talk about this, Shoshana, is to say, wow, it's been years and years with no allegations of sexual impropriety by anybody.
Okay. I like that you're being the optimist now, Anne, so I'm just going to leave that. Thank you for being here, and obviously you can always continue the conversation with us on our social platforms, C-H-O-C-H-M-A-T-N-A-S-H-I-M.
Can you hear us now?